This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Keeping fields in high production preoccupies farmers around the country. Currently, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is considering a proposal to allow the commercial sale of herbicide-resilient corn and soybean seeds that, up until now, have been planted only in field trials. Public comment on the plan is being accepted through tomorrow. The genetically engineered seeds developed by Dow AgroSciences are designed to resist and survive the weed killer 2,4-D. The Environmental Protection Agency is conducting its own review of 2,4-D that's become more popular among some farmers as weeds increasingly outlive the powers of 2,4-D's predecessor, Roundup. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Benn spoke with two farmers, one who says USDA approval cannot come soon enough, the other who wishes it would never come.
Teresa Jonk was one of six daughters raised on a seed potato farm in North Dakota's Red River Valley.
We had a poison shed, and we actually called it a poison shed. There was a skull and crossbones painted on the door to the shed, and we were told to never, never, never go in there. I left home with my mother's admonition to never marry a farmer.
Not, she says, because of the herbicides her dad occasionally applied to tackle weeds, but because her mother didn't wish the rigors of farm life on any of her daughters. Years passed, and Teresa Junk went off to college. That's where she met her future husband, Dan Podol, and learned about organic growing practices.
I was taking in a biology course, and the biology instructor put up slides of his certified organic farm. And I was like, wow, I had just no idea that you could practice agriculture without using, without having a poison shed, right? And so I ran back from the class to find Dan and said, wow, I just came back from this amazing class and started to tell him about organic agriculture, and he very quietly said, well, we farm organically.
His parents started farming in 1953. In 1972, Dan's older brother, David, took on its organic transformation. Teresa, now Podol, picks up the story.
Fast forward to Dan and I got married. Our intent was to go back to the farm and farm with his brother, David. David had a small grains operation. They grew up, they were a second-generation turkey farm. When Dan and I came back, we decided that we would bring the turkey flock back to the farm, only we were going to develop a certified organic meat production system. And so that was the next 10 years of our life, besides starting a family. We were told at the outset that it couldn't be done. We did it anyway.
Couldn't be done, why?
The poultry scientist that we were in conversation with said you couldn't get away from using a coccidostat.
A drug used to combat
coccidiosis.
Podol explains it's a soil-borne disease.
It's a parasite, and as turkeys are grazing around, if there's been a lot of turkeys around, they could pick up eggs of this coccidiosis, and they would develop this disease. And so he said, you can't raise certified organic turkeys. You can't do it organically.
Podol and her husband studied the issues and devised a solution.
And we were successful. So we developed our own label. We began marketing on the East and West Coast, which was where the market for organic was. And so we were able to produce turkeys for about 10 years using this organic system. And then we lost our processor. So, you know, one link in the chain, the chain from farm to market, and we were done.
So Podol says they reinvented themselves organically. They developed an organic seed line. Her brother-in-law took the lead.
He had been breeding varieties for our own use for years. He couldn't find what he wanted in the seed trade, so he just started crossing things and making selections, and so he really is our farmer breeder.
The Podols started making seeds for other companies in 1997 and eventually packaged their own seeds.
Our most recent release is Sweet Dakota Bliss beets. So we have a pepper in development right now. We hope to release soon. Been trialing a number of carrot varieties as well, trying to find one that we would like to offer.
Maintaining the integrity of their grains and seeds is daunting because, Podol says, their 480 acres are an organic island.
We're surrounded by genetically modified crops, so corn and soybeans.
Although they time plantings to prevent cross-pollination with GMO crops, Podol says they don't always succeed.
With our seed operation, we've had difficulty keeping out GMO contamination.
They grow some specialty corn.
We raise a Flint corn. It's a rainbow Flint. It doesn't have any yellow kernels in it. And then we raise a sweet corn. We try to stagger the pollination windows to make sure that they don't overlap. So we can do some isolation that way. But if there is any overlap due to weather, which can very well happen, we do get trace amounts of GMO contamination.
The Podols handpick crops and inspect each cob of corn for contamination.
So as we're picking it, we're inspecting every cob and picking out any of the kernels that are obviously GMO. And then we haul all of our cobs back to the drying shed, the old turkey barn, and lay it all out on screens and go through it all again.
Podol sees the prospect of a new, more resilient, genetically modified seed, along with the occasional drift of herbicides from neighboring farms, as an ominous threat to organic farms like theirs.
Our family has built this very resilient system of agriculture, but it's not 2,4-D ready. And these are volatile herbicides that are prone to drift. And so I find myself in a situation where I'm not sure that our farm is viable. Years of working to make it possible to be fully employed within the farm is now at risk.
Some 560 miles east in Fond du Lac County, Wisconsin, conventional farmer Jim Zimmerman says he gets along fine with his organic neighbor.
We have a neighbor that grows organic sweet corn, and I know that they don't want a pollen drift next to them in their sweet corn. And they want to know what they need to do to make sure that they can maintain the integrity of their crop. So they give us a call and let us know, and we respond by telling them what our rotation is, what our plans are for this year, what it might be for the next 2 to 3 years, so that they can have a good idea about how to manage it.
Zimmerman's grandfather started the family farm with 80 acres and a herd of dairy cows. His father gradually added acres, gave up milking, and today Zimmerman and his brother manage 2,700 acres of corn and soybeans. Zimmerman says over the years, he and his brother have gotten better at what they do, doubling their output, while at the same time using less fuel and water.
It's much more sustainable. We do nutrient management plans, and we go through the soil loss equations, and when we plug all these things in, we're so low, it hardly registers on their scale. And so we're actually probably building soil. I know we are. We're building soil versus losing any to, air or wind erosion. And when you keep the sediment, the soil in place, you're keeping all the nutrients in place. And that's being a much better steward of the land. And that's what needs to be done, I think, and being able to have a chance at meeting that future demand.
But weeds are still a problem that Zimmerman says needs to be effectively addressed so his crops can meet the demand.
You know, in the state here, we have resistant weeds. That's mare's tail and giant ragweed. I think in the major growing areas, in the United States, in the Midwest, and then to the South, they have to deal with this Palmer amaranth, which was, I think, one of the first species that was documented to be glyphosate resistant. But what all of this does, they were able to manage these hard-to-control weeds. And in doing so, we are able to control them much easier and, of course, be more productive. And when we're able to be more productive, we can compete globally better. And that way, ultimately, with a larger supply, we're able to produce more feed, food, and fuel and fiber, and which would actually work to keep the cost of food down.
Zimmerman says tension between large producers and what he calls niche organic growers is a constant.
They've been resistant to all biotech, and of course they've been trying to figure out a way to coexist and whatnot. I believe they are trying to maybe level the playing field a little bit, in their favor, being competitive. The larger agenda is, again, trying to meet current future demand. And these other production systems are wonderful because it's great to have choice. We know consumers have different desires, and it's good to be able to have those choices for those different consumers. But overall, they're not as productive systems, and they are only they're only afforded to do this in times when it seems we have enough food.
Zimmerman says he and fellow growers are frustrated with a drawn-out conversation around Dow AgroScience's herbicide-resistant seeds that he says seems perpetually stuck in the controlled study phase.
What's happened with this product is that it's been in the system, I think, for almost 4 years now. And, we've been promised through USDA, APHIS, and EPA, and FDA, which, look at all of these. They have a chance to look at all these products. And that is our regulatory system. And that we've been promised a shorter time frame in making their decisions to deregulate. We would like to think that the decisions would be based entirely on the science behind it. And it would appear that this being in the system abnormally long, that maybe they're not looking just at science. And that's always a cause for concern, because agriculture is largely about science, the science that we have today. And we know it's always evolving.
Organic and conventional growers may never find common ground, but there are actually some common themes. Jim Zimmerman looks at farmers as stewards of the land.
That's what a farmer is. He's a conservationist. He's a steward because he's stewarding all these valuable resources. It doesn't matter if it's the input products, say, the fertilizers and things like that, and the seed technologies that he's using. He needs to steward all of them. He needs to manage all of them. And the land, being most precious, of course, needs to steward that and do that in a sustainable fashion.
Back in North Dakota, farmer Teresa Podol hopes her three children can make a sustainable life on their organic farm. Jim Zimmerman's son just graduated with a degree in agronomy and is returning to work their farm. Zimmerman says there's nobody better at walking the fields and scouting for where and what problems need tending. For Lake Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
Teresa Podol's family farms organically in North Dakota. Jim Zimmerman raises soybeans and corn in Fond du Lac County. They spoke with our environmental reporter, Susan Bentz. The USDA is accepting comments on the deregulation of the genetically engineered seeds through tomorrow.